I'm recording this on like so many different layers. I have like three recorders going. I am so terrified of losing any of this because this is going to be gold, baby.
Well, yeah, I mean, these you can't put a price on my voice, so you better you better make a backup and then a backup of the backup.
Well, I must say it is very nice to all be together again, so I'm thankful.
It is totally. I know it's been, we looked it up, the last time we did this was the credit union one, and that was 14 months ago.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I know, we're so busy. We're such busy bees.
Well, Jeremy and I got to hang out about 6 or 8 weeks ago, in March. It was over spring break. I was in Florida, and we had dinner together. It was awesome.
Yay. Yeah,
it was so much fun.
That's awesome. That's great. We love it when people come together.
Yeah.
Phil, you were there in spirit, though. You're definitely one of ours, that's for sure.
Good, good. At least I belong somewhere. At least I belong somewhere.
No doubt.
Now, before we get into this, I'm going to introduce the show because this is a big one. So here we go.
Okay.
Welcome back to Deep In Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and I've got two very special people here with me because it is a very special episode. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 10th anniversary of Deep In Bear Country. Yes, that's right. This week marks 10 years of this freaking show. And to join me, I have, of course, Brad Mariska and Jeremy Gloff. Welcome back to the show, my boys.
It's great to be here.
And Phil, you're cutting in and out a little bit on me. I just want to make sure, is it me? Because I don't want your recording to come.
I'm also, like, as you got more excited or talked faster or talked louder, it was like cutting out or clipping on you.
Then I'm gonna keep it mellow. I'm gonna keep it down low and let everybody know that it's the 10th anniversary of Deep In Bear Country, babies.
Oh wow.
10 years on the air.
Wow, you've been doing this podcast for longer than Brother Bear has even been alive.
And with any luck, by the time I'm done with this show, he will be long dead.
That's very dark.
It's very dark. We're going dark today. We're going dark because it's 10 years of doing this show, and somehow I've never built up an audience. It's never gotten any more popular than it was like the first week on the air. So,
Bill, you must have an audience because I feel like different places, like, oh, I saw you on Phil's podcast. Don't you have that, Brad, sometimes?
For sure. I know that your audience may not be huge, but it is dedicated. That's for sure.
That's very true. Now, you guys.
Yeah. And every time you invite us on, I definitely share it with all of my friends. And some of them do listen.
Some of them do listen.
Some of them.
I let my family know, and some of them do listen. So now you guys first appeared in the first season of this show. I had announced that this show is coming. I think Brad originally responded and then roped in Jeremy, and then it just became, you guys are originally just two nervous young men sharing your Berenstain Bears knowledge, and now, and look at you now. Look at you now.
Now we're just nervous middle-aged men.
Jeremy's put out a number of albums since we started. Brad has switched schools. It's become quite a thing. We've all been through so much in life since we started this, but at the end of the day, we're still collecting Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm in the top 10 collectors anymore.
Yes, the world has changed a lot. I mean, Obama isn't president anymore either.
No,
so.
No, he's not.
I remember recording an episode on election night of 2016.
Been quite the ride.
Mm-hmm, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Now, we're doing this not just because it's the 10th anniversary, but because early on in the show, you and you guys, we all visited Mike Berenstain at home in his abode, at his studio. And I remember on our way out the door, he said, "You know, I'm not going to be able to do this forever. And as I near the end of my career, one thing I really want to do is publish some boutique books, some books that maybe the big publishers aren't that interested in, and that I can sort of make available on demand to people of Berenstain and Berenstain Bears merch, of like cartoons and stuff." And we were always just like, what would that be? Like, what would a boutique Berenstain book be? And in the last couple of weeks, we got the first of, I hope, many answers, because Mike Berenstain has released a print-on-demand boutique book. Parents are such a lot of trouble. Guys, what are our thoughts on this book?
Well, I feel like you opened the cover, and that magic that you felt when you were a kid opening up a Berenstain Bear book, I really felt like it was in this book. Like, I just think I love the message of the book. I feel like there was none of that commercial consideration that might come into later books. It's just very kind of raw and very sincere. And I just absolutely love this book. I'm so glad he did this. That was my thought.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I was absolutely charmed from the first page. It feels very authentic, very true. I like how you said, Jeremy, not commercial. This is from the heart. And it's just a really cute book. It's well illustrated. It's got a simple but beautiful message. I'm so glad that he released this.
So what this is, and we got an email from Mads Torres, Mike, by way of Mads Torres, and announcing that Mike was making available a book that his parents had written and illustrated years ago, based somewhat on their It's All in the Family comics, but it's a children's book about their parents, and he came across it in the archives, and it never got published. I don't know if they shopped it around or what, but it's available to purchase. It is the original illustrations. It is it's unfinished art, basically. It's very sketchy. It's very pencil line, but it's pure Stan and Jan Berenstain.
I feel like one of the biggest skills that they had is taking the really complex human condition and just simplifying it into a few lines. You know what I mean? Being a parent or an adult and how exhausting it can be and how tired we are, but how, you know, mom will clean up the toys and the kid will wake up. I mean, they just really filter down the human experience and just, you know, really simple but accurate text. And I just thought it was amazing.
Yeah. And there's a really interesting spin on this book. So it uses the same illustration style and the same family as the It's All in the Family comic strip. But what it does is, if you've ever seen the It's All in the Family comic strip that they published in, Good Housekeeping magazine, it's about the struggles of raising a family and having kids, but it's written for parents and from the parents' perspective. And this book flips it, and it's written from the kid's perspective. And I was reading this book today, and I was like, oh my gosh, I should give this to my mom tomorrow for Mother's Day. This makes like a really cool gift for a parent. And I just thought it was really clever how they changed the perspective of the storyteller from that of the parent to, in this case, that of the child.
Definitely, definitely. And it is that other, it's very much sort of this it's hip cartoonists and humorists slowly, like, sort of learning how to fashion their messaging and their humor and their style in a sincere way to children, and kind of the essence of what a children's book is, which is that the world is complex And you're seeing one side of your family, but you also should understand that there's another side of your family and that your parents might be strict and they might nag you and they might seem like pains in the butt, but it's easy to forget that the you know, if you have the kind of parents who do wonderful things those parents do.
Yeah, there's like an unconditional love that is written into this book that makes it, I think that's why we all reacted in the way that we did, that, you know, some of the pictures are funny and the situations are silly, but in their comic strip, it was just for laughs, right? And I feel like this is an early precursor to some of the Berenstain Bears books, the ones that came a little bit later in the First Time series, because the First Time book series always taught a lesson or it kind of had a moral to it, right? And so this book does also, but this is maybe the first example of San and Jan doing that, because at this time in the early 60s, they were just trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And to get a little bit personal, you know, I don't want to get too political on your podcast, but for this book to come out now in 2025, you know, there's a big part of our country now that's really trying to get back to core values and the way things were in, you know, and their way of doing that might to be to take away rights from people and to not honor the, you know, certain segments of the population. But for this book to come out in 2025, it shows that really getting back to the way things were is just being a kind person and just being caring. So I feel like to read this book today in the scope of what's happening really is a reminder to me that if anything should be retained from, quote, the way things were, it's just to be kind, to be a good human being. So that's why I'm glad I read this book today and not any other time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is that, Mike. It's something that Mike always talks about, which is that, you know, at the end of the day, he wants the message to simply be decent to each other, like be kind, be good people. And that's the essence of the Berenstain Bears. That's the essence of what his parents taught. And it definitely comes through in this. He said in his letter to us when he announced this book, he said, you know, he said it was created around 1960, probably predates the Big Honey Hunt. He had no knowledge of the creation. His parents never mentioned it to him. He doesn't know if they ever showed it to anybody or submitted it anywhere. They haven't found any correspondence related to it. He says he's not sure if it's intended to be a children's book, but it fits the format. It may be connected to the greeting card and gift book work they were doing at that time for Hallmark. It foreshadows the themes of the Berenstain Bears and the trouble with parents. He specifically called that one out. He concluded there was no point in trying to get it published commercially. It's too much of a curiosity, but he thought it'd be of great interest to people. But I love that he specifically pointed out the trouble with parents, because I feel like that's a forgotten Berenstain Bears book that, I mean, for a lot of people that people don't think of, but that this book is that same idea of we all annoy each other, but we also do wonderful things for each other. And you have to take the strictness with the goodness when it comes to parents.
Right. Yeah.
Do we know off the top of our head what the website is where people can go get this?
Yes, it is at Blurb. If you go to blurb.com, which is like a print on demand book publisher, you get it there, and it's a hardcover book. It's like $30. Wonderfully bound. Like, this is a sturdy book.
Yeah, I was very pleased with the communication from the website. They're very communicative. Like, you know, it's printed, it's being shipped. Mm-hmm. It was a very fast turnaround time. I'm such a nerd that I played for the 2-day shipping. I'm like, I need this in my hands as soon as possible.
Yeah, but yeah, they printed it like that and got it out right away. I mean, I didn't wait very long for it. And yeah, it's a nice solid book. It's nice illustrated. Doesn't have any copyright or anything in it. Like, it's almost like you're getting someone's sketchbook, because you open that first page and it just starts. And there's no lettering, like hand lettering. It's just typewriter. It's almost like they just took what was in the original rough draft and just transferred it right to the page, which I love. It reminds me, after Hergé died, they printed Tintin, the final Tintin book he was working on, Tintin and Aleph Art, which was like a very esoteric Tintin adventure, but Hergé had never finished it. And so they just printed it as his sketches and his like handwritten notes. And it works that way because it's like you're seeing into the artist's process. And if you really want to see the Stan and Jan process, like this is it. This is while they're still working through ideas and layouts and stuff. It's all right here. And I think just from an artistic perspective, it's an invaluable resource. We just don't have this for sale from Stan and Jan Berenstain.
Right. I think the only time a copyright appears is on the very last page. They do like a little 2025 Berenstain Enterprises or Berenstain Publishing Incorporated.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Way at the back of the book, but that's not standard. You know, you don't see that till you get to the very end of the book. So pretty cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a real book. There's an ISBN on the back, but that's it. And it's wild. I almost wish there was like a version with some like biographical info or like a little like how I found this book or something. Maybe I'll ask Mike. Maybe I'll talk to his team and see if I can dig up a little more information on the history. But it sounds like they were just going through stuff and they found a book.
I remember when we were poking through the you know, the archive when Mike invited us kindly to his studio. And, you know, I wonder, was this sitting in that room that we were in just way at the bottom of a drawer?
Yeah.
I wonder where he found it.
He found it. He probably found it while he was trying to find more rare calendars to give you.
still need 90, 96, and 2000.
If anyone out
find
there.
One Mads or Mike.
send it over to Jerry.
But it's true. I mean, like, that was so cool being down in those archives and seeing how a lot of it just hadn't been processed or organized yet. And I'm glad that they're getting through it and that they found something like this, because this is, I know that Mike called it a bit of a curiosity, but I think it's more than that. I think it's better than that. And it's really cool that it's available. And I think that, obviously, they saw something when they found this that it was worth preserving and sharing. And we certainly feel the same way.
So how many more of these things are sitting in there? That's my question. Like how many? We saw Stan Berenstain's unfinished novel at the Museum of Play Archive. So how many more books and plays and stories are out there that have yet to be discovered?
Well, and we even remember we saw one or two books that would have been part of like the Dr. Seuss a beginner book series that never got published.
Yeah.
So we know that there's definitely, with any artist or any author, there's always projects that get abandoned or rejected. But, you know, with Stan and Jan and Mike having been as prolific as they are and as successful as they have been, I think there's real validity in publishing some of these projects or making them available in some way, so they don't just sit in some dusty archive somewhere and be forgotten to history.
I also feel like, you know, Mike Berenstain's an artist, and I think a lot of times artists can get burnt out by the politics of the publishing world or the commercialization. So I'm sure to Mike there's a little bit of an empowerment in being able to do something that was completely DIY on his own terms, completely outside the realm of that burnout. So, you know, I hope he feels like there was an empowerment behind doing it this way, because I think it's awesome.
Well, yeah, and he even talked about that when we met him that day, but he's talked about it other times, whether it's in letters or on the podcast or whatever, but just about there's so many rules you have to follow now from your publisher, and like they can dictate what the cover is going to look like and the words that you use. And I think for him, especially at the age that he is at now, probably gets a lot of satisfaction, like you said, Jeremy, from doing this project. And it is his project, and it is the raw work of his parents, and no one else had any hand in manipulating that or changing that.
Do you remember that weird flip book that his parents had worked on that was never published? And it was very political. It was like, and you sort of mix and matched pictures of like hippies and Nixon and like Spiro Agnew and things like that. Like they were always working on something. They had something, you know, they were, like you said, they were artists, they were creators. And there was more going on here than simply what Random House was asking them to produce.
It was such a pleasure to me as a collector and a huge fan of this series to dig deeper into their lives and then to see some of the behind the scenes work and see like, wow, these really were my people. Like, these are someone that I would have liked as human beings and been friends with. And there was so much intelligence, you know, underneath it all.
So do you have any idea how the collectors group reacted to this book? Did anyone say anything, or has anyone responded?
I haven't posted much anything about it, except I think when we first discovered this, did one of us post at least a link to it? But I don't even remember if we did that, because I was kind of hoping to wait until this podcast comes out and then use this as the catalyst to be like, hey, if you haven't heard about this book yet, or you haven't bought it, go buy it and check it out. Because I think, like, serious collectors are definitely going to want this in their collection.
Yeah, you can't pick this one up at Kohl's.
Yeah.
Gosh. I definitely was waiting for this podcast to kind of be the launch pad.
Good. Yeah. We want to keep it to ourselves. Oh, have you guys collected the new Stan and Jan Berenstain book that came out?
You didn't know about it?
You don't subscribe to the
my copy for over a month.
you don't get the blurb newsletter of new releases.
I'm sorry, Phil. I missed that. We didn't catch any of that.
I was going to say, you don't subscribe to the blurb newsletter.
I had never heard of blurb before, but now I get their emails.
Yeah. You know, and I say this with love, but as the world evolves and becomes bigger, you know, our collectors group has gotten bigger and there's a lot of people really excited, which is awesome. But there is something very nice to have something that we didn't know about that can be ours just for a little bit too. And I relish that and cherish it a little bit. And now it's exciting to share it with everybody.
I do want to add, because this is deep in bear country, and it would not be a real episode if I didn't waste everybody's time with just a little bit of meaningless trivia. The term blurb was coined by the poet Frank Gellett Burgess, who is most famous for writing the poem, "I never saw a purple cow, I never hope to see one, but I can tell you anyhow, I'd rather see than be one." And he coined the term blurb as a joke, meaning for unfettered praise on the back of a book. So there we go. There's your little bit of trivia.
Nice. They got their money's worth.
Yeah.
how old is the word? When was this term coined?
The term blurb originally appeared in 1906 on the on the front dust jacket of his book, "Are You a Bromide?" He was actually coining and making fun of something else. The picture was of a young woman, a fictitious young woman named Miss Belinda Blurb, shown calling out in the act of blurbing. And it appeared on the cover of the book, and it stuck for any publisher content on a book's back cover. Blurb.
All right.
Oh, look at my horrible pit stains.
Oh. Also, a shout out to Mads Torres. I'm very thankful that that Mads has, you know, kind of embraced us as the collectors and keeps us in the loop with some things, and Mike as well. So thank you. If they're listening to this, I'm very thankful.
Yes, and I will be actually be talking to Mads on Monday, I believe. So I'll make sure and pass that along before this episode comes out, just how grateful we are that they have continued the tradition of considering us worth telling things to. So anything else going on? Brad was telling me before we started recording that he hasn't really been doing much collecting recently. Jeremy, have you been doing much collecting recently?
No, I mean, to be candid, I started to feel like a little bit of collector's burnout. So I just kind of stepped back a little bit, and hopefully my batteries will recharge at some point. Sometimes I message Brad like, I need a break. He's like, don't you dare.
But it's okay to take short breaks, and you know, because I definitely have been at that point too, where I've been burned out for a while, and you just got to take a break. And recently, I haven't been collecting just because I literally haven't had time. Right. But I've been finding a lot of joy in the past year, collecting kind of different editions of books. And I know this is like really niche and very much like completist. But especially with the classic old books, whether they are the beginner books, the Dr. Seuss style ones, or whether it's the first 25 or 30 from the first time book series. It's been really fun to go back and really look through those books closely and collect all of the different editions of them, whether it was a book club edition or a commercial edition or a reprint or a British edition. And I treasure certain books in my collection so much, some of those classic early books. And I feel the more copies or different versions of those early books I get, I just feel closer to the stories, and I feel closer to Stan and Jan and how they were trying to connect with the consumer and connect with families. And it brings me a lot of joy and a lot of comfort. And the nice thing about doing something like that is there is no time frame. There's no deadline. I can hit the pause button and I can come back, because I just know that eventually that certain one book club edition is going to eventually show up. And if it takes me 2 years to find it, it doesn't matter. It's not like there's only one copy out there in the world. I'll eventually fill it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the credit union project kind of took a little bit of the wind out of my sails, just because it was so massive and so expensive. And more recently, another one resurfaced that I never thought I'd find, but luckily I found someone from a credit union that was able to dig me out, you know, up a copy. But like, there goes another $100 donation. But you know, right as of now, we're current, so I'm just gonna kind of like relish that.
That's seriously quite the accomplishment. If there's anybody listening to this episode that isn't familiar with Jeremy's quest to get all of the credit union books, go find his website that lists them all. Go find that episode of this podcast that describes the way that you went about collecting them. That's that really gets to the heart of collecting, I'll tell you that.
And we can't say it on the podcast, but we will always love Brad's initial reaction to the whole
Yes.
We'll say that after the pause button.
Well, gang, anything going on in your lives besides the Berenstain Bears? Anything you'd like to let our audience know about?
Well, we have our collectors group that's on Facebook, and I would like to become, you know, I know Brad and myself go in seasons where we try to kind of take the reins on this group and put up some posts that kind of engage everybody. So I'd like to kind of, I kind of pulled myself back a little bit from different aspects of the group so I can recharge myself and then reinvest. So remember how we're kind of like doing a book of the week that was having some really nice discussions? I'd like to kind of get back to that.
Yeah. And with me being a teacher, I always have more time in the summer. So I'm looking forward to kind of my time of the year where I'm going to be reinvesting myself, especially in that collector group. And, you know, it's the time of the year where I oftentimes give away or sell off duplicate items that I find in my collection. I've got huge stacks of books in my garage right now that I need to move. And then I will also do some sharing, because even though I haven't been collecting as much in recent months, I have found a couple kind of new and unique items for my collection in the past year, and I haven't had a chance to really tell anybody about them or show them off yet. So whether you are a casual collector or maybe just a big fan and you don't actually collect at all, that Berenstain Bears collector fans and collectors, or collectors and fans group on Facebook is really fun. And like Jeremy said, you can engage with it as much as you want or as little as you want. You can check it every single day, or you can take a few weeks off, and that's okay, because it's nice to have so many fans and collectors gathered in one place.
Right, and they're all so friendly. Like, everybody's just like I feel like the Berenstain Bear universe just clicks together, good-hearted people, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for joining me for my big 10th anniversary show.
Oh, please don't wait 14 months to have us again. I can't be here without you guys for that long.
I won't.
Well, and I want to say thank you, Phil, for not only starting this podcast, but continuing it, because to do anything for 10 years, but especially this, where you don't make any money from it.
I certainly don't.
It's in addition to like your normal job, but you have given life and hope and enthusiasm you've kept some of us going when we kind of got like, when we were struggling, and every Saturday I knew there was going to be a new episode of the podcast, and it just kind of reminded me of what I love about the Bear family and about why I love collecting. So thank you so much for not only starting this podcast, but continuing it, seeing it through to the end. I mean, you've basically caught up to real time.
You've basically
done every book in the series.
And Phil, I feel like nobody could do it as well as you do. The amount of experience and intelligence, that the lens that you're looking through the series, I mean, it's just so perfect. So I'm so thankful for you.
Well, thank you both. And thanks for sticking with it for 10 years.
Of course. It's my pleasure.
Many more to come.
And where can our audience find you if they're looking for anything about you two?
Well, if you want to know more about the Berenstain Bears Collector Group or just Berenstain Bears Collecting in general, you can go to BerensteinBearsCollectors.com and a lot of resources there. And you can also search my music. Just search for my name, Bradley Mariska, on anywhere that you find streaming music, because I do perform arrangements of folk songs and holiday music on piano, and I love sharing that music with others, and most of it is totally free.
All right, and in addition to all this, I'm a musician myself, and I've worked on a reissue campaign with my collection, so I've just released over 8 hours of unreleased music, demo versions, outtakes, and deluxe editions of my album. So if you look up Jeremy Glough on any platform, it's all streaming mostly for free. You can, you know, have the purchase option on Bandcamp if you wish.
Awesome.
To, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's great stuff. And I mean, I've said it before, but I'll be performing this summer at the Minnesota Fringe Festival again. It will not be a Berenstain Bears show this time, but it will be in the vein of my last show, semi-improvised solo performance. It's going to be a much darker, slightly grimmer show, but that's me over the last few years. A little darker, slightly grimmer, so... I'll share more information as that comes up. But once again, thank you both for being here. Thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you all next time
deep
in
Bear Country.
Bear Country.
Rawr.
Do you know how hard it is to sync stuff up over Zoom?